Doom do 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 doom do do. Doom do 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 doom do do. Hi, plant people. Welcome to episode 43 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Hi, plant friends, I hope you're having fabulous weeks and they've been super-de-duper planty. And for the American listeners, I hope that you all have a wonderful upcoming Thanksgiving holiday with your family and friends. Big milestone happened for Bloom and Grow Radio last week, friends. It was the one-year anniversary, the first birthday of the show. I still can't believe that I say that those words came out of my mouth right now and last week. The one-year anniversary actually kind of snuck up on me, and I was magically also at a podcasting conference, which was fabulous. I learned a lot. But I just wanted to take the time to say, plant friends, thank you. Thank you for going on this journey with me and taking this ride over the last year of becoming a better plant parent and learning just so much about this community and about plant care and about the science behind plants. And it's just been the most magical, fun ride, and I am so freaking excited about what year two has in store. A few of you have reached out, so if you are interested in potentially giving the show a birthday present, a one-year birthday present, there are two ways that would be amazing for you to support the show. Number one is donate. Donate to Bloom and Grow Radio. The show is so fun to make, but it does have costs and it takes a lot of my time, which I'm so happy to give it. The link is going to be in the show notes. If you'd like to go give a donation to the show as a birthday present, you can give a one-time donation or a repeating monthly donation. Another way to support the show is to go to iTunes or your podcast player and leave a review. Apparently, the more reviews that the show has, the easier it is to find and the more plant people that we could reach and help bloom and grow. So head over to whatever podcast player you're tuning in on and leave a review. All right, guys, on to today's episode topic. So today's episode is about exactly what the title says, our brains on plants, and what the heck happens in our brains when that light turns on, all of a sudden our world opens and we become passionate, obsessed, and sometimes people call crazy plant people. So personally, I feel like I've gone through different phases in my last year of collecting plants, some healthy and some not as healthy in terms of how many plants I was acquiring and at the rate and why. And I've always been super curious about what was literally going on in my brain in those moments where I felt like I couldn't stop buying plants. And I know that I'm not alone. I've heard from a lot of you that you've gone through these phases too, and I knew that I needed to make an episode where I uncovered what was really going on. Enter the amazing plant lady, Dr. Caitlin Vanderweel. She was the answer to the plantiest and most expertiest of my dreams. Dr. Vanderweel is not only an awesome listener of Bloom and Grow Radio, but she is a neuroscientist and an author with over 10 years experience in understanding how emotions and brain chemistry influence decision making. She has spent the last 10 years of her life literally studying kind of exactly what I needed to understand about what was going on in my brain at this time in my life, the answer to my prayers. She's also the founder of Interstellate, which is a movement that blends science and art with visual imagery to promote science education, which you'll learn about more in our interview. So, plant friends, Caitlin is like really, 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 really smart. She's also a crazy plant lady, so she totally understands that moment that we all go through. And this conversation just blew my mind. I feel like I learned so much and I'm so much more empowered to kind of just have understood what I went through, what's going on when I get that little itch to get another plant. I think creating this episode for me kind of knocked in this truth of that I'm so excited that I get to make this show and help encourage you bring green indoors and connect with nature and become happy, healthy plant parents. But I also feel like if I'm going to encourage this hobby, I also have the responsibility of asking the tough questions like, is this a hobby or is there some compulsive behavior that I have to take a deeper look at this point in my life? How lucky are we all that we get to bloom and grow our collections and ourselves in the happiest and healthiest of ways? So before we get started, two quick notes on today's conversation. Number one, Caitlin and I do talk about some more grown-up topics in this episode than other episodes of Bloom and Grow Radio. So I know that a lot of you listeners actually listen with your children, which makes me so happy. I love hearing from you about how your kids like to sing the theme song of the show. But for this particular episode, I might just give it a listen on your own before you enjoy it with your kids. If we say that my other episodes are G or PG rated, I would say that this is rated PG-13. And number two, we talk about this in the actual episode too, but I really just want to stress that neither Caitlin nor I are licensed psychologists. We are just two plant friends having an amazing conversation about neuroscience. I hope your minds are blown by the conversation as much as mine was. But before we head into the conversation, I am so excited to tell you all about today's sponsor, Modern Sprout. So Modern Sprout is one of my favorite planty companies that makes the most amazing hydroponic grow kits and some of my favorite grow lights. All of their lights are broad spectrum LED lights that look like any other light that you might have in your apartment, so that beautiful white light. And they come with a 3-setting timer that provides low to full light settings for any type of plant you might have, and the timers automatically turn on and off. So you just set the timer settings once and then you never have to think about it again. So they have several different types of styles of lights on their website, and I have been using two of them for almost a year now. Their Grow Bar, which is essentially like a strip of LED lights, is installed in my bookshelf, which has made the most epic of plant shelfies. The Grow Bar comes with several different ways of mounting it, but I chose the easiest way of the adhesive sticky squares that they include with the package. The setup was so easy, I literally just stuck the squares onto the grow light and then stuck the grow light under the bookshelf. So I've had my geranium under this Grow Bar for 5 or 6 months and it's flowered like 4 times. And I also grew my tomato seeds. I started my tomato seeds under the grow light, inspired from episode 20, and it worked like a charm. Then I have their gorgeous glass and antiqued brass grow house model living in my kitchen, and I seriously feel like it's a piece of art, even without the plants. So it sits on my countertop, but it can also be mounted onto the wall, and it has a hinged door, which makes watering and swapping plants in and out of it super easy. I'm actually currently growing the Modern Sprouts hydroponic grow kits of organic non-GMO basil, sage, and mint in it, and the whole setup just looks adorable. I'm definitely planning on giving some of their grow kits to friends for the holiday season, and I think an even more epic gift would be the grow kits paired with the grow house because it really just looks so beautiful. So, speaking of the holiday season, Black Friday and Cyber Monday are upon us, my plant friends. So the folks at Modern Sprout wanted me to give you a heads up on the amazing Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals that they have in store for you this weekend. So they'll be offering 30% off. Yes, 30% on Black Friday, and then 20% off plus free shipping on Cyber Monday. That is a ton of savings. And of course, if you have a little too much turkey, you find yourself in a food coma, and you miss Black Friday and Cyber Monday, you can always use the code BLOOM at checkout any day of the week for our exclusive Bloom and Grow Radio listener discount of 15% off with Modern Sprout. So once again, you can visit modernsprout.com to check out all of the amazing planty products and use Bloom for 15% off whenever you'd like. Caitlin, welcome to Bloom and Grow Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh man, girl. I know we've talked about this offline. I am so stoked about having this conversation. I'm like jumping out of my skin. So I want to just dive in and know a little bit more about Dr. Caitlin Vanderweel and how you got these fancy letters next to your name and what you've kind of spent the last 10 years of your life doing, dedicating to science.
Yeah, so I just finished my PhD at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where I studied neuroscience.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I've been really interested in the neurotransmitter in our brain called dopamine and how it's important for emotions and motivation, basically why we do the things that we do. So that's what I've been studying.
That's amazing. And you're also a plant mom, a pretty amazing plant mom. To how many plants do you have?
Oh, I have 80. So I went from actually killing all of the plants that I've ever owned. So after I finished my PhD, I decided I was going to get good at being a plant mom. And since I am outside of the lab at the moment, plants have kind of taken over my life. So yeah, my New York apartment has about 80 at the moment.
What was the change that made you decide to have plants?
Yeah, so plants, I'm like obsessed with propagating them.
Okay.
For me, they're little mini science experiments. Will mm-hmm. they grow? Under what conditions? And so for me, since I've moved away from the lab, this has given me the opportunity to kind of experiment a little. I've also been in a preclinical lab for a long time. So I've been working with animals for a while. And so I no longer have them to take care of. So plants kind of fulfill that need to nurture and take care of something. And so, yeah, I'm a plant mom now.
I love that because I talk to so many different people about why they have plants. And I love that for you, it's like fulfilling that scientific part of your brain and like that maternal part of your science, I guess, practice where you were taking care of animals and now you're taking care of plants. That's such an interesting twist.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. But it works perfectly for me.
Do you have any favorite plants? Like, are you obsessed with propagating any types of specific plants or you kind of have a wide variety?
I have a wide variety. Probably my favorite plant, I have a white bird of paradise, which was the first Ooh. One I got when I moved into my apartment. His name is Francis.
How big is he?
He's very big. He's the biggest one in my apartment, and he's doing very well. So that's making me very happy. I have one avocado tree that I've grown from just, you know, an avocado that I bought at the grocery store, and I'm very proud of that one. And that's actually sitting inside of a science beaker, so I can see all of its roots, and I like that one. So a lot of my plants are in beakers, actually.
I love that. Okay, so I want to pick your scientific, brilliant brain. I guess you're the second doctor I've talked to because I had Christine from Work Hard Plant Hard. I always get a little intimidated when I talk to these like fancy science people on the show. But I would love for you to help explain to me what happened when I had lived my whole life like trying to care for plants, but killing them and like not really caring that much. Like when I killed them, mm-hmm. I would go into rooms. I would never notice plants. I know that's kind of called plant blindness, but I never really had an awareness about them. I was never really a nature girl. And then all of a sudden, because of this herb garden that I had 2 summers ago, something like literally the only way I can describe it is like something like clicked inside me. You know, my cute little story is like, I had the herb garden that turned into 3 plants, which turned into 10 plants, which turned into 20 plants, and now I have 60 plants. But when I think back on that time in my life, it was, I feel like I did kind of have like addictive tendencies where mm-hmm. I kind of was thinking about plants nonstop. And every opportunity I had, I was buying another plant to take home. Like I had this like thirst for plants all of a sudden mm-hmm. because I feel like I was like woke to them all of a sudden. And once we hit 60 plants, Billy had to kind of have an intervention with me and say, hey, listen, I love you. I love this habit. I mean, I love this hobby that you're developing. I love how happy you are with the plants, but I'm starting to feel like hoarders, like in our tiny little 500 square foot apartment, and we really need to go on a plant pause. And now, like, pretty much for the last year, I've been on a plant pause, and I was able to kind of stop that behavior because mm-hmm. I didn't want my boyfriend to break up with me. But it did kind of feel like this moment where I was a little out of control of my ability to, like, stop myself because they were just making me so happy and I was like so obsessed. And I know I have an obsessive personality, but like it kind of was like next level. So could you kind of like break that down? Like what was going on in my brain as the neuroscientist that you are that was like causing or fueling this new passion / like a little bit of an addiction?
Yeah. So this is definitely a job that dopamine did.
Okay.
So dopamine is this neurotransmitter, chemical signal in the brain that is involved in reward-related processes. So basically any kind of rewarding thing that you engage in, whether it be eating food or having sex, you have a little burst of dopamine in your brain. And I'm sure you've heard in popular science, people say that dopamine is this pleasure chemical. And that's not necessarily the case. It's kind of a little bit of a misnomer. Dopamine is actually what we like to call a reinforcement signal, or in other words, a do it again signal. Like, that was good. I want more of that. Do that again.
Okay.
So probably what happened when you had this first success with your herb garden, you had a little burst of dopamine in your brain being like, that's awesome. Like, I've never had that before. I want more of that. Right?
Okay.
And so that's the signal that was being transmitted across your brain was, I want to experience this again. Buy more plants. Plant more plants. And with each subsequent, you know, experience or time that you've bought a plant, you get another reinforcement signal, some more dopamine release flooding your brain saying, this was good. Do that again. So, I mean, there is like an evolutionary basis. So, you know, why does dopamine exist in our brain at all? Well, of course, we need it to fulfill things that are important for our survival. Like, this is why it's important or released when we eat food. It's like a signal in your brain that says, oh, you gave me some calories. I need that to sustain life. Here's some dopamine. Do that again.
Okay.
Yeah, or if you think of it from an evolutionary perspective, we know that dopamine's released when we have sex, and it's your genes screaming at you, I want to be passed on to the next generation, you know, do that again. So it's adaptive, but sometimes there's things like plants or drugs of abuse that completely hijack this system or hotwire it in a way that it wasn't really intended. So, for example, we know that most drugs of abuse, like alcohol, morphine, cocaine, these cause dopamine release, and that's hotwiring your dopamine pathway. And so, very similar, this is what plants is doing to your brain, but just on a much smaller scale.
Oh, boy.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, you just broke that down so brilliantly. I definitely have a few follow-up questions. So dopamine, so am I getting kind of addicted to that dopamine rush? And
yeah.
That's why I keep doing it. And this could be like with plants, obviously, but it could also be like with, like you said, wine. Or for me, that's also like whenever I eat a French fry, like any form of salty potato definitely has that kind of do it again feeling too.
Yeah. So I don't want to necessarily, you know, go as far as calling it addiction, but it can cause compulsive behaviors. And what's really interesting about these things that flood our brain with dopamine is our brain has this really unique ability to react to these like overstimulation events. So for example, if you were to take a lot of cocaine, your brain will flood with dopamine and your brain is saying, I don't want this. This is too much. And what happens is the receptors, the thing that binds to these dopamine molecules in the synapse, they actually become overstimulated and they basically are removed from the synapse. So what happens in subsequent experiences, you have less of these receptors because you overstimulated it. And so you need more dopamine to get the same high with subsequent exposure. So it kind of causes this like crazy cycle where you need to do more of something to get the same feeling.
To get the same rush.
Yes.
Oh my gosh,
exactly.
That's so real. So when you overstimulate that, oh, okay, hold on one second. We got to go back to, so first off, for the lady in the room with a degree in opera and not science, can you, you said dopamine is a neurotransmitter. So what's a neurotransmitter?
So a neurotransmitter is a chemical in the brain. It's basically our messenger system. So we have these neurons, and when they become activated, they release these chemicals into like an open space, which we call a synapse. So dopamine is one of them. There's also, you know, serotonin and norepinephrine and glutamate and GABA. And these are all different chemical messenger systems that do different things. And when it gets released into the synapse, there's these things called receptors. And these molecules, these neurotransmitters, bind to the receptors. And this is how they, you know, affect subsequent cells, brain regions, and consequently cognition and behavior.
So there's neurotransmitters, synapses, and then what was the third? The binders?
Receptors.
The receptors.
Yeah. Think of it as a lock and key.
Right.
You know, the lock is the receptors and the key are the neurotransmitters. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then what you were saying with that flooding is once you overstimulate yourself, there's less synapses. So it takes...
The same amount of synapses. There's just less receptors. So we say that the receptors internalize. So they get sucked out of the synapse. They get eaten back up by the cell. And so there's less receptors. And so the receptors are responsible for, you know, the dopamine's action. And if there's less of them, then you need, you know, more dopamine in the synapse to have the same effect.
Got it. Okay. And
does that make sense?
Yeah. So
cool.
Once you kind of have those five plant purchases, then all of a sudden it's not as exciting to just get one plant. Or
yeah.
It needs to be like an expensive plant or like a rare plant or like some extra level of like special.
Mm-hmm.
It can't just be like a little succulent or something.
Exactly.
Interesting. Okay. And then what is the difference between dopamine and endorphins? Because it kind of sounds like the rush that you get from dopamine is similar to the rush that you get from endorphins like after a workout.
Yeah. So dopamine is a really fast neurotransmitter in the brain. And endorphins are slower. Endorphins are a type of hormone. And they're in the same category as oxytocin, for example. And they have a much slower mechanism of action. But endorphins, yeah, they're really important for, you know, feeling good. And, you know, how I said that dopamine isn't necessarily a pleasure neurotransmitter. Mm-hmm. It's a do-it-again signal, not oxytocin, but endorphins are getting closer to that feel-good signal. It's mediated by hormones and not this fast neurotransmitter release.
So I might get endorphins from, like, gardening, like sweating and, like, pulling weeds in the garden because of the action of that, but the release that's happening in my brain when I'm getting plants and having them succeed or whatever is dopamine.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's generally would be about correct. Yep.
Okay, cool. And then another question. So dopamine is the do it again signal that is causing me to continue to want to buy more plants, or really, I mean, I love that this conversation could also be about like buying more clothes or buying more shoes or like eating another piece of chocolate. I mean, it's like so cool how wide we can kind of apply this conversation. But another thing that I thought was so interesting was how like connected I felt to my plants and how, I don't know, like cozy, connected, like spiritually connected, like what was going on there? Because especially as someone who like never really cared much about nature, you know, plant killer, like would just toss the plant away. Like what was the change there?
Yeah. So this is how plants are a little bit different from perhaps buying shoes or handbags.
Okay.
So plants are kind of like this double whammy because they also cause a release of oxytocin. And oxytocin is another type of hormone that's really important for bonding. So when you tend to your plants, when you water them, when you talk to them, it's very likely that you're causing release of oxytocin. And we know that this is the case when you engage in nurturing behavior. So when you pet a dog, you're also causing a release of oxytocin. And the reason that this hormone exists is because it helps us bond with our babies. So again, it's going all the way back to evolution. There's an evolutionary mechanism of why we have oxytocin. As humans, we have a baby and it can't take care of itself at all. And so immediately after you give birth, you have this massive rush of oxytocin that's saying, you care about this thing, you should take care of it, because if you don't take care of it, it's not going to live very long. And so this nurturing drive releases oxytocin. And in the same way, when you repot your plants or when you water them, it's very likely that you're also having this same kind of oxytocin hormone rush.
So the care. So when you say it's twofold, it's mm-hmm. it's compounded first with the dopamine and then with the oxytocin?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where we're not nurturing clothes that we buy. So we're not going to have also the oxytocin with that kind of maybe compulsive spending habit or something like that.
Precisely. Precisely.
That's interesting because, yeah, I mean, we talk about ourselves as plant moms and dads and mm-hmm. plant parenthood and our plant babies, and people take family portraits with their plants. Like, that's real. Like, there is true yeah. bonding there. You know, I call my lime tree, like, I have a name for my lime tree and I call him my best friend. Like, that's extra. I realize that. But there is this, like, weird thing in me that makes me do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just like when you have sex and you have this massive release of oxytocin and you look at the person laying next to you, like, I care about this person. Like, I want to, you know, be with this person longer. It's the same thing with plants. Just, you know, you're watering them and talking to them and nurturing them in a different way.
Right. But it's that act of care. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure with sex too, there's that kind of biological needing to pair off with someone to, like, procreate for humanity, like, it right in our, like, nature-based selves or natural-based selves.
Again, like, sex is one of those that's like oxytocin and dopamine, which is why it's, like, you know, so pervasive in our culture and you know, our lives.
How do you measure these things? Like, how do you measure these hormones and neurotransmitters?
So hormones you can just measure in your blood. Mm-hmm. So you can extract a blood sample, run different analyses, and look at hormone levels. Dopamine's a little bit more complicated because it actually requires recording release in the brain. And so it's very difficult to do in humans. We can look at how, you know, different brain regions that we know are involved in either producing or receiving dopamine are activated with, like, human brain scanning. But, you know, as technology progresses, I'm sure in the future we'll be able to do it soon. But that's what we do at the moment.
Right. The brain scans, like, on Grey's Anatomy or House, like, when they're doing the brain scan and they're like, oh, yeah, this sector, like, lit up or something.
Yeah.
Right?
So
that's what the brain scan is.
Yeah. So we don't necessarily know for sure if it's, you know, lighting up or becoming activated in response to dopamine. Mm-hmm. There's different ways to look at, like, receptor activation that's a little bit more precise. But this is why a lot of research happens preclinical, where we're allowed to measure dopamine release.
You're so smart. This is so fun. Okay. So moving right along. So the things that we're talking about right now aren't necessarily bad. It's totally fine for me to buy a plant and enjoy the dopamine rush that I get as long as I'm purchasing and owning plants in a healthy way. So mm-hmm. there must be a fine line between having, like, a healthy kind of dopamine plant relationship and what I would imagine would be like a there must be some sort of switch into more of a compulsive behavior there. So can you talk a little bit about what that switch, like, into compulsivity, is that a word?
Yeah, compulsivity.
Compulsivity yeah. is, and how, like, yeah, just kind of what it is.
Yeah, so just to be clear, compulsivity is defined as, like, a strong, irresistible internal drive to perform an action. So in this case, it would be like you feel like you need to go out and buy a plant to feel, you know, good. And we define compulsivity as this urge, but it also occurs despite potentially aversive consequences is one way that we define it. And then also compulsive behaviors can happen because you're trying to alleviate a negative emotional state. So this is what we would call as, like, retail therapy, where you're like, I feel bad, so I'm going to buy something. So these two things, including, you know, habitual behaviors kind of make up this idea of, or this notion of compulsive behaviors. And why people switch from, you know, having this healthy, you know, relationship to being compulsive, we don't actually know how that switch occurs. I mean, people's brains are different. And as much as we can map out, you know, the basic neurochemistry and mechanisms that happen, some people's dopamine systems are more sensitive. And this happens for a variety of reasons. For example, if you've experienced early life stress, like maybe your parents weren't around or you didn't have resources available to you as a child, we know that that kind of primes your dopamine system to be hyper-reactive. There's also genetic components that govern how our brain produces dopamine and things like that. And so we don't actually know what makes people transition from having healthy relationships to, you know, substances or plant buying to more compulsive, addictive-like behaviors. So we don't actually know. But likely it's due to individual variability in our basic brain makeup.
Because I would imagine, too, like, I hear the word compulsive most used in, like, obsessive compulsive disorder, or, like, there's kind of a negative stigma to it. So is compulsivity kind of defined when a habit kind of switches into a negative, like, out of control moment?
Yes.
So being compulsive, like having a compulsive issue with plants or spending or something like that, that means that there's some sort of disorder there or some sort of unhealthy attachment there.
Yeah, typically, because typically it's defined that it happens despite aversive consequences. So whether it's stressing your relationship with your boyfriend because he doesn't want to live in a jungle, or, you know, you're spending too much money that maybe you don't have. These are the types of negative consequences that would transition you from having a healthy relationship to being more compulsive.
Okay, got it. And let's talk a little bit about compulsive buying and the stages of it, and kind of what we can be on the lookout, or what I guess I can be on the lookout for as, you know, we all move forward in our urban jungles, wanting to make sure that we're doing it in a healthy way, or noticing, like, maybe different signs that we might want to, like, scale back.
Yeah. So there's four major stages of compulsive buying behavior. This isn't just specific to plants, but all kinds of compulsive buying behavior. The first, of course, is anticipation, where you have these thoughts or urges, where you feel maybe a little bit antsy that it's been a couple of days since you've bought a plant and you seem really focused on either buying a specific item or just putting yourself in an environment that allows for shopping. So you somehow end up at a hardware store that also has a nursery,
right,
instead of just going to a hardware store. So this anticipation, you know, it's this negative emotional state that causes you to want to have retail therapy. It's this, like, anticipation phase.
Okay.
And then there's, like, the preparation phase, where you, you know, perhaps research what plant you want to buy, where it's, you know, where the plant that you really want is going to be. You maybe call up a friend and say, hey, let's go plant shopping, or look up where some sales are. And then there's, like, the actual shopping. And, of course, this is, like, where you're engaging in the thrill of the hunt. And this is where a lot of people report feelings of, you know, having a shopping high. So you're hyper aroused. You have, like, this ramping up of dopamine release. You may also have norepinephrine, which is important for attention and arousal. And so you just kind of feel on edge. You're shopping and you're excited. And then you make the actual purchase. You have this rush of dopamine that was like, ooh, that was fun. Like, let's do that again. And then you can also go into, like, this negative emotional state where if you spent too much money, or you get home and you realize this isn't maybe the plant that you were actually looking for, the one you actually wanted to get. And then you go back into this, like, negative emotional state that can cause, like, this cycle to continue.
Okay, so anticipation, preparation, shopping, and the fourth is like the negative, the regret that would like put you in.
Well, it's like this, it's spending. So it's like you get that brief dopamine, like do it again signal. And then for some people, not everybody, you can transition back into this negative emotional state.
Because I would say that part of me, it feels like when I was kind of in this cycle, I don't think I necessarily felt regret at the end. Like, I think after I shop, but I definitely, like, after I would bring home the plant, it would, like, be new and shiny for a few days. And then I would certainly, and I would, like, get that dopamine rush from it. But then I would certainly start to itch for, like, what the next thing was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's different for different people. I've definitely had that, you know, slip into, like, regret where I was like, oh, maybe I didn't need a sixth pothos.
Or like when, that $60 pot I purchased.
Yeah. Yeah. When I really wanted a fern and somehow I ended up with another pothos, mm-hmm. you know, like those kind, I mean, you know, but I just felt like I had to spend something. I've definitely been there. So.
Yeah. I'm just like letting this settle in with myself for a minute to see if I have other questions, you know, and once again, like, I feel like there's a really fine line here because of course, like if I've made plans from a healthy perspective, like if I made plans to meet up with some plant friends at a plant shop on Saturday, of course mm-hmm. I'm going to anticipate it and be super excited. And of course right. I'm going to enjoy plant shopping and maybe I set a budget for myself and I go and I get the plants or whatever. And it's like a really fun experience for the day. And there is dopamine there and it is like a high. Mm-hmm. But there's a fine line, I guess, between that being like a healthy behavior if it's planned or like if it's something I do for fun that day versus like if it's something I kind of, I guess, need to do. Like is mm-hmm. that the differentiation where like I'm going to plant shops by myself or like I'm going out of my – not even by myself. I mean I love going to plant shops by myself. But like maybe like going out of my way – to like make a plant shop work or like forcing something. Cause I definitely know that was a moment. There were a couple of weeks where I would kind of like every time I went out to dinner was like, is there a plant shop around here? Or like, mm-hmm. I'm like, it's a, I'm just letting it all hang out telling you all of this. But you know, there was this there was a moment where in my life where I really was like so obsessed with getting to know all the different plant shops and like seeing what mm-hmm. everybody had and all that kind of stuff. So I guess, is that the differentiation, like needing to and like wanting to?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think wanting to is normal. I mean, for any hobby you want
to engage. Of course. Yeah. And like, of course, enjoy it too.
Yeah. So there is a really fine line. And I don't necessarily think, you know, the planning or finding out where the best plant shops is necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it can also help you optimize your spending behavior. If you find a plant shop that has the cheapest one because you've explored all these other places, then mm-hmm. it's good. But ways to know that you're, you know, you have a compulsive spending problem, for example, would be, you know, you if you have any money left on your paycheck, you feel like you have to spend it, you buy things that you can't afford, or you overdraw your bank account, you know, buying plants. If you really strongly feel that buying things makes you feel better, that it makes you happier, and that you have to buy things to feel good about yourself. Or if you feel really anxious on days that you don't go shopping, those would be some kind of red flags that perhaps you do have a problem. Or, of course, the biggest one is if it's getting in the way of you living your life. So, of course, if it's putting stress on your relationship, or it's accumulating to the point in your home where your home's function is compromised, of course, then we get into more of like hoarding behavior. But those would be like some major red flags that maybe you have a problem.
I think too, a big like aha moment for me when I kind of like snapped myself out of that cycle that I was in was because I was also in that cycle, like right in the beginning of my plant parenthood. So like I had just not killed a few plants and all of a sudden I was like plant lady of the world. And I was just like bringing home plants all the time. And then I had this moment where I was like, okay, wait, I'm so obsessed with like growing my urban jungle, quote unquote, and making it larger. I'm not even able to kind of learn what I need to learn about the plants that I have and like care for the plants that I have. Yeah. And Billy was like helpful in helping me realize that, where like it wasn't necessarily about the quantity that I had, but it was about really like knowing every plant that I had in my apartment and like leaning into being the best plant parent for those plants, instead of like buying so many that I was like forgetting about this one, or I didn't water that one. And then all of a sudden it was like becoming unmanageable and stressful.
Yeah, definitely. If you feel like you are reaching the limits of what you can take care of, and for me, for example, I am definitely getting to that point. And I am also going through this process trying to be like, how do I stop buying plants? So I'm right there with you. I'm totally there. But, you know, if you are thinking about, you know, you're not keeping alive as many as you would like, that's also like another red flag. And so, like, for example, ways for me that I've decided that I'm going to control my spending behavior is I'm going to make a list of all the plants that I really, really want. And instead of just buying more for the sake of buying more, I'm going to buy the species that I really want to bring into my home and also put a budget. So I have to match up these two things to kind of keep myself in check. If I'm going to buy a really rare plant, then I'm going to have to put myself, my spending habits on hold for a while and not buy that next plant for quite a bit of time. So, you know, I'm not a clinical psychologist. So if you feel like you have a problem, I would definitely urge anyone to talk to a therapist or a psychologist. But these are just some strategies that I'm kind of coming up with myself. Another one is to just channel my urges more productively. So when I feel like I want to buy a new plant, I decide to try to propagate some of my plants. So I'll go through and snip off some stems and place them in beakers, and or I'll split and replant the plants that need a little bit more care, or a little bit more room. So instead of feeling anxious of, you know, not spending money or buying more plants, maybe try to channel it more productively into like taking care of your plants.
I love that. And I just want to echo two things you said. Number one, 100%, neither of us are clinical psychologists. We are two, for everyone listening, Caitlin and I are just two plant friends, and Caitlin happens to have a PhD in neuroscience and she's just educating me. So this is just completely our an educational conversation. And if anybody feels like maybe this episode, you know, maybe unveils that you need to see someone, please go talk to someone with a licensed therapist and work this all out. But just going back to that, yeah, I loved all of those three suggestions for minimizing. They're definitely things I've taken into consideration too. Mine was a little bit more, what's the word to use? Extreme, where I was kind of put on a plant pause, but like I actively participated in the plant pause. I mean, it was a conversation the both of us had, realizing, you know what, we're really at our capacity. And I also just want to say, I love that you brought up, like, I agree with you that I think everybody kind of hits their threshold, their capacity for like what their limit of plants is in their apartment in a healthy way. For me, it's 60. You know, I love my 60 plants. Taking on more, I think, with exception, like a couple of really special ones that I hope to, you know, get, I don't think I'm really ever going to fluctuate over 60 in this apartment. For other people, like when Hilton Carter was on the show, we also had a conversation about that. He, you know, we talked about how for one person, you could have one plant, you know, you could have one kick-ass like fiddly fig, or you could have a couple of, you know, you could have three plants on your windowsill, and that's your threshold, and that is so okay. Like,
yeah,
you know, because you're getting the dopamine, you're getting the connection to nature. It, you don't need to live in a crazy urban jungle. And on the other side, for some people can have 300 plants in their apartment, and you know, they work from home, or like they, that's their super duper hobby, and they have the budget, and it makes them happy, and it's not hoarding because they have the square footage and like it works. Like it's a different moment for everyone. So what you and I are discussing for our personal, you know, what our personal limits are, obviously are going to look different on other people, and no judgment on any of it. Like it's just all how we can like healthily manage this hobby, right?
Right, exactly. Everyone has their own limit.
Totally. And I love the idea of giving yourself a budget. I certainly started doing that before I went on the pause, and then the budget was like zero. So now the like loophole with the budget is once you get plant friends, like you do plant swaps and like send each other stuff. Yeah. But that's helpful. And I love keeping the list. That's something I do too. Like I have three or four plants that I really want and eventually, and I know that I'll find them eventually. And I know if I have the opportunity to get one, I might get one, but I don't need any more, you know, pothos or like peperomia right now because I have a ton of them, you know. I'm so lucky that I have a ton of them. But I think that's a nice kind of bright line to set for yourself when trying to manage that. And then I love your thing for channeling into propagation. Or for me, like I had a couple of plants that needed moss poles. So I learned how to like build my own moss poles for them and figured out how to propagate and like read a lot about fertilizing because my first 6 months I didn't fertilize my plants because I didn't know that was a thing, you know? Like there's so much you can learn. Like learn the Latin names of the plants that you have. Like learn, you know, there's so many things you could channel that energy into. So I totally love, I'm just picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally true. I mean, I look at all of my plants and like, I got this plant, I don't even know what it's called. It was $5. And I was like, I'm just going to get this tree because I want a tree. Mm-hmm. And I got it and immediately all of the leaves fell off. And so I was like, at this point, I was like, okay, I'm not going to buy more plants. I'm going to figure out what is going on with this tree. And I've been moving him around and he finally is sprouting all new leaves. So I'm like, okay. So now that I'm making sure that all of my plants are healthy, you know, maybe I can begin to think about another one. But I just don't think I have the time right now. So
yeah, but the perspective of like, do I want 10 super healthy plants that have like the perfect spot and I really know how to care for them and I know what they are, or do I want 50 plants where I'm not quite sure their care instructions and a lot of them are dropping leaves and, you know, it never feels good to like have, you know, unhealthy, unhappy plants.
Yeah, exactly.
That's real. I love that. Okay, cool. So let's see. We also had some listeners write in questions. I just want to review. So what about the difference between compulsive buying and hoarding? Is that like another fine line?
Yeah, so they're definitely related. For example, when you think about compulsive buying, the main focus is the process of shopping. That's where people report, you know, this kind of high or like arousal state. In hoarding, the focus is more acquiring an item. You know, acquiring specific items and filling your home with them. So in plants, you can kind of see it going either way. Another difference is attachment. When you have just strict compulsive buying, you have little to no attachment to the item that was bought later. With hoarding, you often have a, you know, very strong emotional connection to items. It's very difficult for you to get rid of things. So it's very easy in this case because we have, you know, this oxytocin kind of coming into play where we develop these strong emotional bonds where it's very easy to then transition from compulsive behavior to hoarding.
You know, a listener wrote in asking, why do some people go from zero to 100 like so quickly? And then why do some people like not even care about plants? Like, do you think that some of this is internal or like in our genes? Like, why is it more difficult for some people than others to kind of control these types of behaviors?
Yeah, so we kind of covered this a little bit before when I was talking about how there's just individual variability in how responsive your dopamine system is. For example, you say that you kind of already have compulsive behaviors outside of just plants.
And totally.
So it's very, it's easy, you know, and I also do too. So for us, you know, it's kind of just maybe our dopamine system is just a little bit more hyperactive than most. But for both of us, we came from not caring about plants at all. And what that transition is like, what mediates that, I'm, to be honest, completely not sure. But I think for people that, you know, tend to have more addictive-like personalities, that these kinds of behaviors are much more common. And there's tons of reasons why that might be, from genes to, you know, of course, there's the nature-nurture debate, and there's a lot of things that could have happened in your childhood that could lead you to be more compulsive. There's also just, you know, gender differences where compulsive behavior just happens to be more common in women, which also might
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, which also might be have more of a genetic component. But, you know, we're as science, we still don't totally know what makes people different. And for example, when it comes to things like addiction, that's basically the biggest question in addiction. You know, you think of most people in their lives have tried a potentially addictive substance, including nicotine or alcohol. But very few, relatively few, become addicts. And we still have no idea why that is.
Really?
Yeah.
So let's talk about, I love that we've kind of dove into, I don't even want to say the negative side effects, but I love that we've had this like really candid, honest conversation about when, you know, a love for plants can kind of become a little bit unhealthy. I want to kind of end the conversation asking you a little bit more about what happens in our brains that makes us so happy around plants. We had a great episode on horticultural therapy in September, and I loved talking to the horticultural therapist kind of about why nature makes us so happy. So could you kind of talk a little bit more about why plants are so good for our mental health?
Yeah, so we know that being out in nature dramatically decreases circulating stress hormones. There's also this hypothesis that suggests that it causes our brain to relax a little bit. So we have this brain region called the prefrontal cortex that sits just behind your forehead. And it's kind of like your brain's command center. It's really important for decision making and planning. So it's kind of always online, monitoring what we're doing, what's going on in our environment, and trying to make sure we're doing the best action at the right time. And so that's a huge load for your prefrontal cortex to carry. And there's been quite a bit of research in humans that suggests that when you are out in nature, that the prefrontal cortex has a decrease in activity. So it relaxes and it kind of dials back the activity in your brain's command center and allows it to rest. And so it's really interesting because when you talk with people about going on nature hikes or spending time in nature, they'll often report things like, oh, I've been thinking about this problem. It's been really bothering me at work. And then when I went for a hike and it just kind of popped up, like the answer just came to me. And so the idea is that, you know, your brain is kind of relaxing and you can be a little bit more creative. And so in that way, experiencing nature, being around plants can be quite good for you. We also know that people that live closer to green spaces also have lower mortality rates. So in that
really?
Way, yeah, of course, you know, there's needs to be more research to figure out exactly what's going on. But yeah, there is some evidence that that is the case. And so now there's actually been more research into indoor plants. So a lot of research has been like taking a nature walk and things right. like that. But even though the practice of keeping plants has been around for a very long time. Like there's evidence that Egyptians started bringing plants indoors during the third century BC. And also like there's ruins in Pompeii that reveal that there was like interior plants more than 2000 years ago. Mm-hmm. But we haven't really studied a lot about how interacting with plants indoors affects our brain. There is one study that I saw recently where they had 24 young males, like between 25 and 30, and they basically either had them perform a plant-related task where they repotted a plant or engage with a computer game. I can't remember for how long, maybe like 25 minutes or something like that. And during this period, they asked them how they felt afterwards and also measured things like blood pressure and heart rate. And they found that compared to the men who played the computer task, those that engaged in plant-related activities, they reported feeling more calm, comfortable, and like more soothed almost. And their blood pressure and heart rate was significantly lower. And we know that blood pressure and heart rate becomes elevated when we're aroused or stressed. So in this case, it suggests that, you know, actually nurturing plants relieves stress.
That's wild. So the studies that you mentioned that are more nature-based outdoors, you were saying that they decrease activity in your prefrontal cortex. So mm-hmm. is that hormonal as well? Because it's not, stress is hormones, right? So
right.
you lower your stress, you like lower those hormones. So is it all, is this all like the same decrease in blank, or is it different? Does it vary?
It's going to be a little bit different in the brain. So while there's hormones in the brain, we tend to think of hormones having their actions in the periphery.
Okay.
So like circulating in your bloodstream, although there is, you know, hormones in the brain as well. This decrease in activity is most likely due to neurotransmitter release, various types of neurotransmitter release.
Okay.
But it's, yeah.
And when I've heard it kind of people saying like my central nervous system relaxes when I'm in nature, mm-hmm. what does that mean?
Yeah. So that's basically the same thing. So it's just saying like you know, when you're busy, like attending to like your environment or, you know, thinking about work stuff, your brain is using a ton of energy. Mm-hmm. When you're out walking around in nature, there's a lot of evidence that suggests a lot of, there's a general decrease in activity, particularly in these brain regions that are, you know, kind of like our command centers. And so that allows us to be more creative and potentially have a more positive emotional state.
Okay, so I'm going to ask a question, and if it doesn't make sense and you don't have an answer for it, I'll just edit it out. So when I'm in nature, so I like with my human brain, I feel like I always have 10 things I'm kind of thinking about. Maybe one's on the forefront, but then I have like 9 kind of like not dormant, but like it's almost like a phone that has like a lot of apps running, right? Mm-hmm. So like I always have like a bunch of stuff kind of like jumbling around my head. And when I am in nature, or when I do like put my phone away and sit with my plants in the morning on my balcony, or like if I do give myself, you know, 5 to 10 minutes of like plant care in the morning, it does feel like those apps kind of close. Like it does feel like everything kind of just like settles for a minute, because I think mm-hmm. with all that stuff in my brain, like constantly running, I have this like level of stress that I don't even recognize anymore, because we're all just like humans trying to live our lives, like thinking about a lot of like complex things because we live in a complex mm-hmm. place. So is that kind of the prefrontal corp, the decrease in activity, like, is that kind of what that is? Like the closing of the apps, or just kind of like the settling?
Yeah, absolutely. So the prefrontal cortex, another one of its main functions is short-term memory. So these, you know, the things that you describe as being apps in the background, that's being juggled by your prefrontal cortex. So your prefrontal cortex is keeping these, you know, topics or other things in mind in the background. And so when you have a reduction in your prefrontal cortex in its activity, it has to get rid of, you know, some of the energy that it's using to keep these things in the forefront of your mind. And so, yeah, that's exactly what happens, is it allows you to release those momentarily. And again, the mechanisms by which this happens, you know, we still are not sure, but considering the brain scan suggests that this is the case, this is our best hypothesis, is that it's kind of alleviating your short-term memory load, at least momentarily.
Oh my goodness gracious, Caitlin. This has been such an interesting conversation. Thank you for all of your knowledge. I'm sure that this is going to bring up a lot of other questions for people. Maybe we'll have a part two of the episode in season three or something. But I'd also love, I want to ask you the final question, but also before I do that, I would love to just, where can we all find you and your studies? And I'd love to just give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit about Interstellate, your company. Like, where can we find you and, like, ask you more questions?
Yeah, so you can find me mostly on Twitter.
Okay.
So there's a large neuroscience community, and I also tweet about plants there. So that's basically where a lot of my community is. And you can find me at Kate VW, C-A-I-T. V as in Victor, W. And if you have any questions, I would love to try to answer them or point you in the right direction. And then, yeah, I also have this side project, which is called Interstellate. And it blends neuroscience with art. So basically, as scientists, we collect all of these beautiful brain images. And for the most part, no one gets to see them. But some of them are really stunning pieces of art. So I started collecting them from neuroscientists all around the world and use them to communicate science information. So what the brain is, what it's made of, how it communicates. And so we have two self-published volumes, which you can find online. You can also find Interstellate on Instagram and Twitter. And then I'm also writing a book. So
what are you writing your book on for Interstellate?
So I've done the self-published volumes before, but I want to have a proper, you know, coffee table style book, which, you know, you can buy off of Amazon because, you know, I've collected all these beautiful images from neuroscientists, but I've printed out the ones that I could with corporate sponsorship and distributed them for free. So the idea is for this book to be a primer on the brain, like Neuroscience 101, but illustrated with all of these beautiful, incredible images of the brain.
I'm looking at your Instagram right now, and I am shook. It's so wacky and wild, some of these photos. So everybody, if you're interested in more information about Interstellate and maybe how to get your own copy or keep your eyes peeled for the book that Caitlin's working on, you can go check out Interstellate on Instagram.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, you are just the coolest plant lady ever, Missy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Oh my gosh, it was so much fun. And I'd love to just leave off with my favorite question to ask all my guests. Why do you think everybody should have a plant, but maybe through the lens of a neuroscientist? Why do you think it's important for, you know, people to be experiencing the dopamine that we all get with our plant babies?
Yeah, I think it's just, I mean, there's just so much evidence that suggests that, you know, having plants, being around plants is good for your mental health, ranging from decreasing stress all the way to increasing pain tolerance. And, you know, we still don't fully understand why these things happen, but why not, you know, do something good for your brain and have a couple of plants?
I love it. Thank you, Caitlin. This was eye-opening.
Thank you for having me.
And there it is. Thank you, Caitlin, for that awesome conversation. I hope this chat just made you think a little bit and provided you some interesting perspective in our journey that is always blooming and always growing in plant parenthood. Thank you again to Modern Sprout for sponsoring today's episode. You can go visit modernsprout.com to check out all of the amazing hydroponic planters and gorgeous grow lights that they have to offer. Remember the Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals they have coming up this week. And if you're looking for a discount any day of the week, you can always use the code BLOOM at checkout at modernsprout.com for 15% off your purchase. All right, plant friends, until next week, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you want to join the Bloom and Grow Garden Club, head over to bloomandgrowradio.com/garden-club to join the planty fun. When you join, you get a free download of the Keep Blooming print that Molly Mansfield made exclusively for us, and you will also get an email with the password to the private Facebook group, which is what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is pretty amazing. For behind-the-scenes scoop, plant tips I learn along the way, and sneak peeks of future episodes, follow me on Instagram at @bloomandgrowradio. And plant friends, I'm here for you, so drop me a line if you have an idea for an episode, live event, or maybe if you're a planty business looking to sponsor the show. I am always here to help you keep blooming and keep growing.